You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. When is a technique practical? Or, how I learned to love the spinning kick. By what criteria do we determine whether or not a technique is worth knowing or attempting? Let's first discuss whether a technique is worth learning in the first place. Using your best judgment, do a cost versus benefit analysis. What is the cost of learning a technique? To me, by far the most significant cost is the time spent learning and maintaining the technique. Some techniques require much more time than others to develop to the point where, as Bruce Lee was fond of saying, they are yours. That is to say, when you can execute the technique without conscious thought about how to do it. Since none of us live forever, we each have a finite amount of training time in our lives. A technique that takes 3 years to master costs more than one that takes 1 year. How do you determine the benefit of learning a technique? If it's an offensive technique, how long does it take to travel to the target? And how often does it make it through your opponent's defenses? Does it do sufficient damage? How much energy does it take to execute? If it's a defensive technique, how much of the time does it prevent the opponent's attacks from landing? Or, failing that, how much does the defensive technique reduce the damage? Comparing the cost of the technique with its benefits can be a useful guide when deciding whether or not to invest time and effort into learning it. Once you have learned a technique, you'll also want to have an understanding of the risk versus the benefit of choosing the maneuver from your bag of tricks at any given moment when competing, sparring, or fighting. Some techniques are riskier to use than others. Sometimes a very powerful technique can be risky. If you pull the trigger on this technique and you miss the intended target, its considerable momentum can throw you off balance, leaving you more vulnerable to counterattack than you would like. Using some techniques might increase the risk of injury to yourself. Some techniques use considerably more energy than others, contributing to early fatigue. You might consider any of these risks to be worthwhile if the technique has the chance of a large payoff. When facing any given opponent, it's important to understand that he or she may have made very different decisions when building his or her arsenal than did you. The human brain is an amazing processor of information and coordinator of the body for training and fighting. But it's also prone to self-deception and grave errors in logic. One of these errors is to assume that a technique which you consider to be impractical can be dismissed as harmless. It's very common to hear martial artists ridiculing the techniques of other arts for this very reason. Many a foolish young and a few old martial artists have been nailed with and even defeated by techniques which he or she considered silly. You should remember that there are other motivations besides the desire to be practical. Many people, especially young people, are drawn to fanciness. They may devote what you might consider a foolishly large fraction of their training time to a technique you think is impractical. Let's take as an example a technique which many modern martial artists might consider to be less than practical: the spinning kick. The particular type of spinning kick is unimportant here. It can be a spinning back kick, spinning crescent kick, spinning hook kick, or any other type of spinning kick. Which particular variety does not matter. Kicking, by its very nature, carries a certain risk. Just picture it. In the middle of a fight, you decide to stand on one leg long enough to kick the opponent. It's difficult enough to keep your balance in a real fight while standing on 2 feet, much less on one. A spinning kick ratchets the risk up from there in 2 ways. Pretty much the first thing you do when executing a spinning kick is to commit one of the greatest cardinal sins in all of fighting. You turn your back to your opponent. This not only, for a brief moment, points most of your natural weapons away from the opponent, it also blinds you. This turning action also begins the second risky element of the technique. You begin a turning motion that generates a lot of angular momentum. This makes the kick very powerful, but also difficult to control. So, let's sum up the situation here. While in a fight, you turn your back, stand on one leg, and begin whirling like a dervish. Why would anyone ever learn or use such a risky technique? I'm not embarrassed to admit that I did. Back in my younger days, I had a pretty good spin kick myself, and can still fire off a quite serviceable one when needs must. I scored on lots of people with it, and had good and sometimes great power with it. But it took a lot of time and practice to raise my spinning kick to that level. Why did I choose to commit that much time to spinning kicks? If you had asked me at the time, I probably would have said something like, "I find perfecting the spinning kick to be an interesting challenge." While different people would have different motivations, I suspect that many people do so because, to coin a phrase, it looks cool, or in more modern parlance, is sick. In truth, that was probably my motivation at the time as well. While you might not see this as a good reason, the desire to look cool or to pull off a sick move has served to motivate many young men and women to spend countless hours developing a very high level of skill in disciplines like parkour, skateboarding, and other extreme sports. It's my experience that this phenomenon of motivation is prevalent in the martial arts as well. At this point, you might say, "Wait a minute. I'm not a teenage boy, and I'm certainly not concerned with fancy techniques." Remember that I'm speaking now about what your opponent might do. He or she may well have committed a huge amount of time to perfecting a sick martial arts technique. It can be a fatal mistake to make the assumption that a technique which you consider impractical cannot hurt you. If you have never practiced against the technique, you probably will be more easily surprised by its angle, reach, and/or timing. I frequently express this idea to my students by saying, "It's not necessary for you to know every technique that exists, but it is desirable to be able to at least survive, preferably to defend, and ideally to counter any technique that may come your way." One negative phenomenon that often results from the practical versus impractical question is when a given martial arts school projects an atmosphere that implies or even states, "We don't do that technique here." Students at such an academy may be made to feel silly or subject to disapproval by their superiors in the academy, or worse, actually be forbidden to use the technique. I feel this is counterproductive and even foolish. An instructor should express to the student his own thoughts on whether a technique is practical, but should also encourage an occasional foray into the sick and bizarre, with a prudent assessment of how dangerous this technique might be to the student or his potential training partners. Let's return to our example, the spinning kick. If you have a student at your academy who devotes the necessary time to master the spinning kick, you should consider that student a resource, and encourage him or her to use the spinning kick in sparring. This will provide exposure to the spinning kick for the rest of your students from the practitioner who has raised the technique to an effective level. Just as a diversity of body types and mentalities among your students makes for a better learning environment, so a diversity of personal arsenals among your students is equally valuable. Let them learn the spinning kick if they want to put in the time. Every academy needs at least one good spin kicker. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Marshall Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.